Hi there, if you're looking to get started with a website of your own and a domain name, we've got good news for you. With our affiliate link with Kualu, you can click on that link which is in your show notes, which is for our affiliate link. You can go over to Kualu to get started with your website and domain name today. They've also got a very handy chat support system which is usually in the bottom right hand corner to send messages back and forth to Kualu if you'd like to ask them for help to get started with your domain name and website today. So that's Kualu, and you can use them to get started with your website and domain name today. Thank you very much to Kualu for this affiliate link. Hi there, if you'd like to get rid of the ads in Entertainment Talks podcasts and listen to the ad-free versions of our episodes, we've got good news for you there as well. You can subscribe to Entertainment Talk at either the $5 level tier or $10 level tier. The $5 level tier will get you access to all of Entertainment Talk's previous ad-free podcasts and the future ad-free podcasts that we make in the month that you're subscribed for. If you also subscribe to us at the $10 level tier, that will get you that benefit that I've just mentioned, and it'll also grant you access to request a review for 2 episodes of a TV show and a general discussion on that show, or a film review of your choice. So if there's a TV show out there or a film that we've not covered perhaps and you'd like our opinion on it, we can watch 2 episodes of that TV show or film review. So it's one of either of those per month. Of course, if you continue subscribing each month, you can pick a TV show, then a film the next month, and so on and so forth. This is a great way to support Entertainment Talk, get your ad-free podcasts, and also get some reviews of your choice. Thank you very much for supporting us, and thank you for listening. Back to the show. Welcome to Becoming Heisenberg. It's Entertainment Talk's podcast for Breaking Bad on AMC and Netflix. I'm your host, Matthew. Joining me today, my co-host is David. How's it going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Cool. This is for Season 3, Episode 4, called Green Light. We do have some news to talk about in a moment, some sad news, unfortunately, but we'll talk about the episode first. What did you think of this one?
I really enjoyed it. I couldn't remember exactly what happened post last episode. It's another one of those things where you sort of remember certain plot points and not others. So I don't remember the bit of Walt going to the going to confront Ted and you know, Mike showing up and all that sort of stuff. So it was kind of nice to go back and see all that. I like the way that Gus kind of forces them back together. He's on the path of forcing them back together. I think that's a really devious way of getting that to work. I think there's lots of really good stuff in this episode. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I quite agree. I liked a lot of the things that happened. It's interesting to see the movements of Gus in this episode as well, of him trying to get them back together, and the whole take your half bit at the end was mm-hmm. was kind of funny. It still is amazing. I can't remember what sort of the stopping point is for the Walter White sort of comedy. I mean, when we get to like the really dramatic stuff in sort of seasons 4 and 5, that stuff doesn't happen as much. But it was interesting to kind of see a bit more of that. So that was great, because there still is, you know, the Walter White moments and the Heisenberg moments. I know we've talked about sort of per different scene, watching those two sort of personalities clash and sort of unfold. So that was really great as well. Even things like the take your half and the breaking the glass or trying to.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of like different types of that. But then like when he's with Jesse and stuff, that's full on Heisenberg. Well, not full on Heisenberg, but that's more sort of Heisenberg. I liked Hank's arc for this episode as well.
Yeah.
And it kind of shows, because interesting when you look at, say, Hank,
And you think of maybe men and men's mental health and stuff, and which obviously is a serious topic within men and everything, and seeing him trying to deal with that and navigate that, and at times put on a brave face, and but also kind of because he's so determined to get Heisenberg, and was it Alaska? Well, I can't remember the place he was supposed to go off to.
El Paso, isn't
El
it?
Paso, that's it, yeah. And he's like, no, I'm not going. And the little sort of like change there of, oh yeah, I'll quickly wrap this up and then go do this. And his boss was like, no, I need you to go now. So he's got kind of that choice to make. And the investigation side was quite good. So lots of really great stuff in this episode. Again, it is a bit of another setup episode, but I think you're moving the needle. I thought that there's very few episodes of Breaking Bad that in some way, shape, or form don't move the needle. I mean, there's the other episode coming up, which was one of the more, I don't want to say controversial, it wasn't really a controversial episode, just one that divided opinion a little bit. But I think that's this season, because I was having a little scroll through the episode names. I think that's later on this season. So yeah, it's another really, really great one. So that's Breaking Bad for you. We do have some sad news, unfortunately, to talk about. Of course, we have a character called Hector in the show. Who was played by Mark Margolis, who unfortunately passed away. I think it was slightly earlier this week, sort of Monday, Tuesday-ish, at the age of 83. I saw across social media, you know, from Bryan Cranston and many, many other people, nothing but love for him, nothing but saying, you know, he was professional, he, you know, challenged them all in the right way. Like, Bryan sort of specifically said, like, how he was on set and how he sort of pushed Brian and challenged him forward in a good way and everything, and how loving and stuff he was. As I always say with kind of TV villains, I'll use the governor as an example. You watch the, and obviously these people are acting, they're not actually like this in real life. Although there are some actors out there who aren't quite so nice. And you then hear about these people later, or you hear them speak, and they're just the nicest people. And you look at somebody like Hector, and of course I've never met Mark myself, and you just hear about how loving and kind he was. And I remember when I went to like Walker Stalker Con and met David Morrissey, who played the governor, nasty, nasty character, but just, you know, what one of the nicest, well, certainly
Lovely
one of the
guy,
nicest
like,
piece, people I met there. But that's where acting comes in and stuff. So it was really nice to hear some nice words about him and stuff. I can't speak personally about what he was like, I never met him, but it's always sad to lose some talent. You know, who was the other one? Giancarlo Esposito also posted about him and stuff. So it's sad when we lose our talent like this. Of course, we've lost a lot of talent over the years, unfortunately. What do you think, David?
I mean, he's had a very, very long career, obviously. I mean, the guy was, he was 83 when he died, and his first acting role was in 1976. So, he's been around for quite a while, and has been in a range of, he one of those guys that pretty much was a straight up jobbing actor. Throughout most of his career, I mean, he had a bigger role in Oz, which was a huge show when that was
I've heard
out
of
in the
that.
sort of late 90s, early 2000s. And then was in Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, which is by far the longest runs he's had on a show. He was in The Equalizer for a bit, the original TV series as well, quite early in his career. But I mean, yeah, he's. I think one of the genius things about him as Hector, when we first meet him in Breaking Bad, he's already in that wheelchair, and you, the amount of emotion and acting that comes through from a character who basically has to sit there and all he can really do is ring that bell. It's there is a phenomenal amount of work that comes through in that character. It's really quite an astonishing piece of work. I mean, it did win him an Emmy nomination, and quite well deserved nomination for that, because it is an incredible piece of acting, because it's so difficult to do something like that where you're having to get emotions and a performance when you've very, very, very limited in what you can actually put on screen. So it was a wonderful, wonderful piece of work by him. And yeah, I mean, you know, 83 is not a bad age to get to, but still, I, you know, we'll be very sadly missed, I'm sure, by, you know, all his friends and all his family. And yeah, and you know, I thought he was just brilliant in that role. He also played I think the landlord to Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, in the
I saw someone writing about that. Yeah.
That was the other kind of role that he was remembered for as well. But yes, he's been in whole, you know, just like odd little parts in quite big films, you know. I mean, he was in that, he popped up in Daredevil, he was in Hannibal, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, he popped up in, and the TV shows. I mean, you know, like I say, he had a bit of a run on The Equalizer, the original series, but he popped up in Quantum Leap. He's been on Star Trek Next Generation, Blue Bloods, he's popped up in American Horror Story, he was in 12 Monkeys, The Affair, Person of Interest. You know, he's been in some great, great shows. So, yeah, I'm very sadly missed.
Yeah, it's interesting when we talk about Emmys, because what just occurred to me then, even just trying to win an Emmy on Breaking Bad, let alone every other show on TV, because you've got so much talent on this show, is hard enough. But because they almost had to like share them between them, all these great people that we have on this show, and obviously his name's definitely up there with some of the best talent. And yeah, like you said, I mean, you've got the facial acting, you've got a little bit of body acting, and then you've got that bell and his sort of reactions. That's sort of what he's got to work off of. So, yeah, incredible talent, as we said. There we go. But it was just nice to see, you know, so many nice comments about him from, you know, from people that have actually known him and worked him and with him and stuff. So that was nice. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back in a minute and do some housekeeping, content news, whatever you want to call it. And then we'll get into the recap. See you in a minute. All right, recently on Entertainment Talk, it's been a very interesting week because I reviewed one thing that I absolutely loved and one thing that I absolutely couldn't stand. What are those two things, you might be wondering? Yesterday, I went to see what was possibly, in my area at least, the last screening for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and I absolutely loved it. It was absolutely phenomenal, and I just thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. For lots of different reasons, and it was one of them things where in order for me to critique parts of it, I had to actually think of something that was bad. It was one of those types of films. So very, very strong must see, maybe the best film of the year so far. I mean, there's quite a lot of films this year, so yeah, if you want to hear me talk about a glowing review of something, that is one of the newest examples for that. Over on Watching The Witcher, for The Witcher Season 3, I got myself through the season, which is never a good phrase. If a content creator tells you they worked through something, mm-hmm. or was glad that they finished something, then that's not a good sign. It was a very, very bad season of TV, and I spent a fair amount of time talking about the massive problem with Ciri. Not her as a character, but what they're doing with that character. And now Henry Cavill is out of the role because it was interesting before the season and you heard about the writing. And then the third season came out. And the second season was good. First season was great. Second season was still good. But the third one was where he decided to quit. And I don't blame you, Henry.
Yep.
Because in my opinion of the things I've seen from Henry Cavill, which admittedly is not a whole lot, I think that's the worst material he's been given in his career. Mm-hmm. So I don't blame you, Henry. You deserve better. You've had better material. And good luck on Warhammer 40k. And also good luck, Liam Hemsworth, because you're going to get all the scrutiny.
Yeah, as I've said multiple times on Geektown Radio, the problem... I feel really sorry for Liam, because if it gets canned after the fourth season, he's going to get the blame for it, and... it's not his fault. The writing has gone downhill with each season, and unless they do something different behind the scenes, I mean, you know, it's not, this season has not been great. It's been all over the place. And yeah, I will whether Liam's good or bad in this, I will defend it as if it gets canned after season four, it is not Liam's fault. I mean, it maybe partly, I don't know what he's going to be like in the role, but it is not going to be Liam's fault because the writing has been going downhill prior to him getting there. So,
yeah. And if you do that again to Ciri, I won't be surprised if Freya Allen leaves. Yes. The one who plays Ciri, because my goodness me, that was frustrating. Anyways, let me pass from that. Yep. Over on Gaming Talk this last week, we talked about The Last Hope, which might sound like The Last of Us because it was a ripoff from a studio who released the game on Nintendo. There was a whole story behind that. Was talked about Battlefield. EA is looking to reimagine Battlefield. We'll see what that ends up being. And we also talked about No Hit Runs. There was a new record of that recorded. So for someone doing Elden Ring without taking a hit, which is just remarkable. So there was that, really cool to talk about. The United cast, there's lots and lots of football over the next couple of days. Tomorrow, Manchester City play their game. Hopefully Burnley beat them, because I'm just sick and tired of seeing Man City cheat and win. So there's that. Then there's the women's quarterfinal at the weekend. The Man United play on Monday. So lots and lots of good football to look forward to. Anyway, my preview podcast for the 2023-24 season, which is going to be the, well, current season now, has talked about all of that. Of course, it's going to be slightly outdated at some point because the transfer window is still open. So in terms of players coming and going, yeah, I'll just deal with that later. So there was all of that. But I'm very, very excited for the Premier League and for Man United to get back out there, start winning again and bring some more trophies home. Obviously, Breaking Bad podcast for last week. I did another podcast as well called The Current Problems Current Problems Marvel and DC Face. So they both face different types of problems and some of the same problems. So I discussed all of that. Chat podcast recently for July, talking about podcast plans, dating and some other stuff as well. I did a Light Must See review for Secret Invasion Season 1. I called it, I know it's a miniseries, but it's the first season, so I just called it that. And that is what we've been doing on entertainmenttalk.org and on podcast platforms. Let's get to that recap. After coming up short for gasoline and cigarette at a gas station, Jesse Pinkman offers meth to a cashier to get out of paying. She is hesitant to accept until a police officer enters the store and queues behind Jesse for the counter. At which point she bows to the pressure and takes the meth as, of course, you know, payment for what he's buying. It was interesting with this because Jesse's got, where he's got this actually placed in his hand, it's quite hidden from this officer. And he's, of course, got no reason to go straight up to Jesse and be like, what have you got there? And, you know, he's just, I mean, I assume if a police officer walks into a situation like this, I mean, he's not there because he's been called there. It's just, you know, patrolling and stuff. You have to kind of walk in there all calm and collected and stuff, especially in America where guns might go off or, well, not might, they will if there's guns in this situation, let's just be honest. But he's got this in an interesting position where it's hidden from him, especially like, you could have had this door be a different layout where the door's in a different place or, you know, something like that. I don't blame her. I don't really blame Jesse either. It's kind of, okay, he's not selling her a nice thing. But I was admittedly slightly confused. Okay, he hasn't got enough cash on him. But I think it was also for him to get like tasters out there and stuff, wasn't it? But it was an interesting scene. Anyway, what did you make of this Jesse scene here?
Yeah,
it's, the cold open.
It's really sort of it's interesting seeing Jesse, you know, particularly as a recovering addict. Then sort of, I mean, yes, he was desperate, you know, so he sort of try and pushes the drugs on her, and that, I mean, the poor girl is sort of, yeah, hesitant to take it and then sort of caves. But yeah, I mean, you're right, there is no reason that the police officer would sort of jump around and like take Jesse there, but it's the amount of balls that he has to stand there with the drugs in his hand. He's seen the police officer come in, he knows he stood right behind him, and then still doesn't like try and palm the drugs or like back away or hide them or anything. He just, holds his nerve. I mean, that's kind of ballsy move, but
Yeah, I
to be
was trying
fair.
to look at sort of the angles and how, because obviously if this, let's say Jesse was a bit shorter and this officer was a bit taller, you know, to a point where like some people can literally see over other people's shoulders. It seemed to all be quite level, at least from what I saw. So, because
Yeah, no,
I kept
there's no
looking
reason
at
why they.
the angle of like where the officer was, where Jesse was, where the meth was, and like, can he see it from a certain angle? I don't think he'd have been able to, unless he actually sort of looked around Jesse, which he had, again, he had no reason to kind of do that. So, it worked out for me. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, that's our cold open. When was the last time we had like a weird cold open? That was more of like a season two thing, and certainly with obviously the Teddy thing.
Yes.
Not Teddy the character, the
Yeah,
actual
the
teddy bear
teddy
from the,
bear.
yeah, the
Yes.
plane crash. Yeah, so it's still remarkable that that led to that, like if you think about that, it's one of
Yeah.
Breaking Bad's bigger achievements. Meanwhile, Walter White makes a scene at Skyler White's workplace while confronting Ted Bennick and is thrown out of the building. Immediately afterwards, Mike Ehrmantraut takes Walt to Saul Goodman's office. Saul tries to convince Walt to continue producing meth, but Walt refuses the offer, hence he finds out they bugged his house, because there's something that Saul said, I think, and Walt's like, wait a minute, how do you know that? To discover the information, he proceeds to tackle Saul to the ground and fire him on the spot. Again, there's something like fighting wise, because he's had a few scuffles like this with Jesse, which is just funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thus losing Saul's help laundering money. Consequently, Walter White, Walt Jr., has noticed a sudden stop in demands for donations for the fundraising site, because obviously that was all through Saul and everything. Yeah, it's a few bits of comedy here with Walter. First of all, like trying to break the glass, and like Skyler comes downstairs and he's like, "Oh, I'm just trying to talk to to Teddy or to Ted," and everyone's just like horrified. Skyler's embarrassed. Walt clearly doesn't seem embarrassed at all about it. And because you kind of had the other funny part as well, it's like, "Oh, he's in a meeting," and Walter's just like, okay, I'll wait here all day, which he probably would have been waiting there
Yeah,
all day,
yeah.
to be fair, because no, Ted was just hiding from him, and then he tries to smash the glass and it just bounces straight back off, and it kind of all just goes for there. There's the scuffle with Saul as well, and he tries to fire him and stuff. It's all quite good stuff, but no, he gets thrown out, and no, it's all really, really good the way this all plays out. I quite liked it. Yeah, it see this episode and the last one as well, how they both add up for Gus and for Saul, and maybe even the one before that for Saul, because obviously if you remember, there's a bit of a sort of thread going on here, which is Jesse comes out of the rehab, and obviously for Saul and for Gus, what they both want, for slightly different reasons, but for money reasons, is to get these two working back together. To get Walt and Jesse back together. No matter really the sort of consequences or the fact that Jesse just come out of rehab, even though he's still, you know, doing meth himself, or not doing meth, but still cooking meth and stuff. It's been quite interesting to see for Saul for the last maybe two or three episodes, and particularly Gus with this one, obviously with the handing him in the other half and stuff, because he didn't technically, because the thing is with that bit later on is, if I can't remember the guy's name that hands the money, if he hands Saul, sorry, Jesse all of that money, Walter White wouldn't even like know about it, but obviously it's a way to try to get that all back on track. So I'm liking the way all this is sort of playing out, again with some classic Walter White sort of comedy in there. What do you think of these scenes here?
Yeah, the scene of him at the office trying to sort of smash the window, it is almost kind of Malcolm in the Middle-esque in places, of that sort of, you know, the because I mean
Is
he's not,
he's the dad, right?
yes, he's the dad in Malcolm in the Middle, and
Okay.
it's got that sort of sitcom-y kind of feel of it when he's trying to sort of move the plant and then throws it at the window and the plant plot pot smashes rather than the window. Yeah, I mean, it's got proper comedy moment in that, and I think it's I really like that. And then they sort of escort him out, and the way Mike kind of shows up and just throws him in the car. I really loved that scene. It's the fact that Mike knew where he was is the reason that he goes, "Hang on, wait a minute. How did you know I was there? How did you know where I was?" And that's how he figures out that he's bugged the house. I mean, and then the offshoot of that is the laundering money site goes down, and it's really sort of interesting. They're sort of pushing to get these two back together, and obviously we know they end up back together, but it's the manipulation from both Sol and particularly Gus. I mean, Sol's sort of not getting anywhere, but I Gus, what I like is later on is Gus's kind of realization that he can use Walt's ego against him. I think that's fantastic.
Definitely. Yeah, some good stuff there. After being called into her office, Walt makes a pass towards the vice principal at the school, Cameron Melina, she's called, by trying to kiss her. She rejects his advances, obviously, and places him on indefinite leave. While he is leaving the school, he is intercepted by Jesse, who has produced a new batch of meth on his own. Again, I found this kind of a little like the way, I guess it's Heisenberg here, talks to Jesse. We'll get to that in a second. Intercepted by him. Who's intercepted by Jesse, who's produced a new batch of meth on his own, which we saw a brief like teaser of at the end of the last episode, didn't we? Walt rejects Jesse's product as substandard, and Jesse resolves to sell the product to Gus Fring himself, which I think happens off screen, doesn't it?
No, it
Through.
happens. It does happen on screen that he does. I mean, you don't see him meet
Oh yeah, it's
Gus,
when yeah. Through Sol and Mike as the mediators, Gus reluctantly agrees to the purchase, anticipating that Walt's pride and financial need may convince him to accept his business proposition. And of course, the idea there is to unexpectedly give Walt Heisenberg, maybe, don't know which one you'd say, some money later on at the end. That's such a great end to the episode as well, just because of how that rounds off the episode. Now that I'm thinking about that, but we'll talk about that later. It's interesting. I remembered the him trying to kiss this woman. I couldn't quite remember why it happened, and then I almost forgot about the him being kind of very out of it scene. At the school, but it was interesting cause, again, going through this has been interesting because you remember certain parts, forget other parts, and then you remember that a character gets to a certain thing, but you don't remember exactly how and that sort of thing. It was interesting because I remembered the kids looking at him in a weird way and the teacher coming in, but I don't remember what caused that exactly. So it was interesting to kind of see that all play out. I mean, again, the main vocal point for the show the whole way through is Walt's state of mind, Walt's ego, Walt as a person, how does he break bad and all this kind of stuff. So this is another sort of piece to that. So yeah, that was and again, you kind of look at him like that and you think, okay, is what is like causing this, and there could be a whole number of things, and I know he's got cancer and all this kind of stuff. I do feel sorry for the it says vice principal here, Cameron, because she's literally just trying to help him, and that unfortunately happens. So, yeah, the bit I found sort of almost Heisenberg funny, almost Heisenberg, I guess you could say, which doesn't happen often, because usually the comedy bits, sort of the ones that we talked about here already, are more Walter White based, whereas the Heisenberg stuff is when he obviously starts breaking bad more and gets more serious. But the way he talks to Jesse about this batch and like this really disappointed sort of, not parent, this disappointed sort of teacher almost. Disappointed parent would be a different sort of thing. But like, you've cooked, like, what is this? Why does it look this way? And they're just clashing over that. There is a bit of a comedy element to it, I think. But again, a different type of comedy to the sort of him trying to smash the glass and stuff. So that's where you're seeing some interesting different sides to him. And then Jesse's just like, nah, gonna do this deal anyway, and I'm confident that I can do it and stuff. And it's interesting for Jesse because, okay, he's recovered from his you know situation. That's brilliant. And he's very confident about what he's doing, and it's great to see him having the confidence. You just wouldn't want him to get back on track by doing this. So there's like a thing going on there as well, I suppose. What do you think of these scenes?
Yeah, the scene. The scene in the office is just so cringy and just so awkward. And obviously, he's going to be put on indefinite leave at that point. I mean, this is the thing, of course, with high school teachers in America is they have what they call tenure, which makes it very difficult to just out and out fire somebody. Although I would argue making a pass at the principal or vice principal is harassment, yeah. And yeah. I probably could have got him fired, but I imagine that's a lot trickier to actually pull off, so it's easier just to put them in indefinite leave. And then the conversation with Jesse outside. Jesse clearly has cooked a perfectly decent bag of meth there. I mean, it's the same formula, it's doing really well, and quite obviously. Although he's nitpicking at sort of, you know, what the flaws are in it, he's saying, oh, you know, this is wrong, and look at the shapes or whatever. Clearly, it is a perfectly decent bag of meth, and it works really well. Walt's more upset about the fact that Jesse's using his formula and he's trying to make out that, you know, he didn't do it right, where clearly he did. You know, and Jesse could have gone and just cooked it on his own. I mean, you know, it makes an interesting thing for Gus is, you know, as Gus has said, he doesn't deal with junkies. And one of the things that he likes about dealing with Walt is the fact that Walt is a sort of, I mean, it's all relative, but I mean, he's a relatively level-headed businessman. Not some jumped up kid, and out of the two of them, he wants to deal with Walt, and of course Walt is the person that came up with the formula in the first place. So yeah, I mean, there's sort of that, because I mean, he could just go, okay, I'll just use Jesse, but I think he's obviously concerned that Jesse's an ex-junkie, and you know,
Heisenberg's the name he wants as well.
Yeah, so. And he also, I think, yes, he wants the sort of brand recognition of Heisenberg as well. I think there is a certain amount of that. So, yeah. Plus, I think there is the problem that if he then went straight into business with Jesse, I think Gus realizes that Walt is going to become a problem. Because of Walt's ego.
Yeah.
You know, because I said before, I mean, you know, the entire thing, Walt's ego is the thing that drives him, and it's the thing that's driven him since.
I mean, it's still the reason the show exists.
Yeah, the entire reason the show exists. Because had he just taken the money off, as I said before, had he just taken the money off his friends in the first place, none of this would have happened.
Or lived in the UK.
Yeah, or lived in the UK, yes. Yeah. Wouldn't have done
it's it, just yeah. One episode.
Yeah.
A TV movie.
Yes. It probably wouldn't even make it to a TV movie. It's like a half hour episode. So that I rather love is the fact that, you know, Gus agrees to this purchase knowing that Walt's ego will get the better of him when he discovers that not only has Jesse been making the stuff, but Gus has been prepared to buy it as well. So, yeah.
I like some of the dialogue between Walt and Jesse here of like, oh, I don't remember all the words that he used, but like, oh, did you use this when you did this? Oh, I bet you did, didn't you?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's like, oh, yeah, I used this. And he's like, oh, of course, yeah, you use this instead of this. And of course, I don't understand any of the what that means, but it's the way it's being put across.
Yeah, Jesse's going, no, I did it all right. And, you know, he's basically saying, no, I did it all right. I did exactly what we should do. I was very careful, you know. And he's looking to Walt to be proud of him, of the product that he makes. And Walt's being a dick about it because of the fact that he's pissed off that Jesse's basically used his formula. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Right, great scene between those two.
Yeah, that's Breaking Bad. What is next? Skyler is continuing her affair with Ted. Good for you, Ted, I suppose. Albeit with increasing suspicion from her co-workers after Walt's outburst. After having sex at his house, she refuses to disclose what went wrong in her marriage and declines Ted's offer to move in with him. Sometimes somebody will get in the situation, and if you're Ted, of course, I can't remember if he's with his wife. Obviously,
I think they're divorced, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think. But he's got kids, hasn't he? Because I've mentioned those before.
Yeah. If I'm to look at this perspective as a guy, which is what I'm doing, Ted should just realise, okay, I've got something good here. And just, he's got this good deal going on. Okay, you've got the problem of, like, Walt being involved, and obviously Walt could probably beat him up and whatever. He's obviously already gone to his workplace. But him trying to push the envelope here of, like, oh, you could move in and all this kind of stuff, and, like, why did this all happen? Because I couldn't remember. I remember why Skyler's doing this. Obviously, it's to get back with Walt, and probably because she enjoys it. And it's not because she likes or fancies Ted. It's because she wants to get back at Walt, and it's also because maybe he is good at it. And also because, I guess, Ted's just kind of an option for Skyler as well.
Well, yeah.
Whereas Ted sees this as, like, oh, I could take this a step further. And I just, when I was looking at this scene and I was looking at, like, how Ted is acting, you sort of look at him and you think, just take what you've got here, because you've got, like, a fairly good offer. Anyway, that's kind of the way I looked at it. But, yeah, some very good, so it's very interesting, like, workplace stuff. He's obviously at the copier and that. And from what I've heard about office jobs like this, days can drag and that sort of thing. And it's, you know, you're doing lots of copying and printing, and you're kind of, there's waiting around and stuff like that. Like, I've heard people who work in offices talk about kind of that situation. Plus, there is two shows called The Office, which shows you what that, you know, there's the UK and the US version of The Office, where you sort of, you see a bit of that, like, the quiet parts of those days and the long parts of those days, that experience. As much as people might enjoy those jobs, the one thing you do hear is, like, it's a bit quiet and it's a bit slow at points, because, you know, it's, you know, you're just doing that. Yeah, this woman comes in and she's like, oh, 4 o'clock, this day is dragging. And this woman's just giving her this look of, like, I'm not interested in this conversation.
Yeah, but it's the fact that they all know what's going on in the office.
Yeah.
Because her husband just showed up and tried to kind of beat up their boss. So they know, you know, and Skyler makes reference to the fact that they all think that I'm trying to sleep my way to the top, you know, which is understandable given that clearly there is something going on between the two of them. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So it's interesting. Because you mentioned an awkward scene earlier between, obviously, Walt and the teacher.
Yeah.
So if we were to compare, so there's the awkwardness, there's not really in terms of scenes, but, like, what's going on. You've got the Mr. President song. You've got I think that was last season, wasn't it? You've got Skyler at work, and then you've got Walt and this teacher. To me, I would still, out of probably the whole show, because I can't remember too many awkward scenes. There's maybe some stuff coming up with Jesse that I can remember. How would you say those, not really rank, but those sit in terms of the more awkward stuff? I think the Mr. President thing's probably at the top of...
Yeah,
like, the most awkward Breaking Bad thing. It's also, it's not just what that is, it's because of how long it lasts as well.
Yeah.
So that was up there as well. What do you think about those things?
Yes, I would agree. The Mr. President thing is just, I mean, it's, I would say awkward. It's not awkward in terms of it, you know, the filming or anything. It's designed to be an awkward scene, and it's And it is definitely there. I mean, it's like, you know, the things like The Office are a string of just really awkward situations. And it's designed to be sort of funny and awkward. And yeah, and I would say the you know, Walt coming on to the principal is also the you know, up there as well.
That's quite quick, though. It's quite a quick scene. So
yeah. The thing with Ted, I mean, Ted obviously wants more out of the relationship with Skyler.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, he's onto a good thing, but you know, because Skyler's hot and
mm-hmm.
Because Skyler's hot and, you know, it will be you know, he could just keep this going. But obviously he wants a bit more. The guy's divorced. He thinks Skylar's reasonable. The interesting thing is him probing about sort of what happened with Walt, because you got to look at it from Ted's point of view. Is Walt, as far as he's concerned, seems to be a, you know, just a guy who is a chemistry teacher. He seems generally pretty quiet. I mean, yes, obviously he came after him this morning on, you know, but that's sort of understandable if he's found out that you're sleeping with his wife. And it's so him sort of probing, well, what exactly happened? Why why did the relationship break down? Is sort of an understandable question from his point of view, because it's like, well, what could he? Because I mean, you know, he's a relatively quiet teacher. He then gets cancer, and then you decide to leave him. I mean, it could look quite harsh on Skylar's point of view, unless Walt has done something like really bad. And it's like, well, what did, you know, what happened? So you can sort of understand him kind of probing things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the offer to move in sort of makes sense. She's saying because she is complaining about the fact that she can't get rid of Walt. He's kind of, you know, moved back in, and she can't stand him and she can't get rid of him. And it sort of makes sense to say, well, you'd always live with me. So yeah, I mean, I thought all that was perfectly reasonable. It was a perfectly sensible sort of thing to do. I mean, she's never going to take him up on it, because it's very early on, you know, and the reason that Skyler is doing this is like you say, I mean, it's more the fact that Ted has shown actual interest in her, and she wants revenge on
it
Walt.
Gets at Walt, yeah.
Yeah,
which he displays.
So. And I mean, I think she does like Ted to a certain extent, but I don't think she necessarily sees him as a long-term prospect. Because you've got to bear in mind that Ted's also in slightly dodgy, given the fact that he's cooking the books at work. So, you know, it's a sort of means to an end, I think, at that point.
Meanwhile, Hank Schrader forgoes his assignment to El Paso at the last minute after receiving a brand new lead about the information. Sorry, about the infamous blue meth. Steve is concerned about Hank's mental well-being. Hank dismisses these concerns after intensely interrogating the cashier who Jesse gave the meth to at the beginning of the episode. Hank retrieves images from the ATM outside the gas station in order to persuade his boss to not reinstate him to El Paso, convinced he is close to something big here. These are some really, really great scenes.
Yeah.
Forget sometimes that, like, Hank can do this kind of thing as part of his job and that, and it's not just about, you know, taking people down. It's about investigating things at times as well. There's also a bit in here with he's questioning, not really interrogating, but questioning this person. And he's like, oh, a name that starts with M, and he's like straining himself to think and all this kind of stuff, which was great. There was, what was it? He said, oh, is it Mike or an M? There's a name begins with M and something blue, or he says something like that. And they sort of take the mick out of him of like, cool, we got a lead, something blue and an M. And you can tell they're just, you know, not happy with that at all. Steve and Hank, like, conversation. Very difficult for both of them, obviously, because, see, again, that's why I kind of brought up the sort of mental health thing. Obviously, because Hank had something very bad happen to him, and he's really just determined to get this thing because it would be such a big, like, victory and all that kind of stuff for him. And I sort of feel sorry for both of them here, because with Steve, it's kind of, he's trying to reach out to this friend, and not as a sort of like, oh, is my coworker okay, but is my you know, partner, is my friend okay? And because Hank is who he is, and he's so worked up and pent up and everything like that, it's just, he doesn't see the helpful side of that. He just sees like, oh, he's trying to like sort of bother me and stuff, and it's just, it's difficult for both of them, and I don't really blame either of them for their reactions, because sometimes when people get in those situations like what Hank has got himself in here, you can unfortunately react to people like that. And Steve knows this, but it's also just, it's like, there's only so much Steve can do, and it's like, how much does he push himself to help Hank? And you know, it's difficult for both of them. So but no, some really, really good stuff here from Hank. What did you think?
Yeah, I think Dean plays this beautifully. Oh, yeah. in this. The particularly the scene where he's in the office with his superior, and his superior is pushing and saying, you know, I just flat out goes, are you going to go to El Paso tonight? And that sort of, no, but only because I'm, you know, I'm onto something big here. That it's that sort of bravado that he plays of, yeah, that layered sort of thing of Hank has this outward exterior of sort of this huge bravado thing, but you can still see that it's a cover, and it's really nicely played with sort of multiple layers on that. And it slightly breaks a bit where he has to say, no, I'm not going to El Paso. But only because, you know, I think it's really nicely played by Dean Norris. Sort of throughout as well, just the fact that he's sort of, you can tell he's almost on the edge of a panic attack at points.
Mm.
And that sort of rising up as, you know, he's trying to put on this front because he's the big hard man, but you can tell he's terrified, and it's just really nicely played by Dean. So yeah, I think he comes across really well in this. It's a really solid piece of acting from him.
Yeah, definitely. Jesse completes his first delivery to Victor, but is outraged when he only receives half of the money. Later, Walt is stopped at a red light when he hears on the radio that Donald Margolis, Jane's father, has been rushed to hospital after a self-inflicted gunshot wound in the wake of the air disaster he oversaw. Victor pulls up alongside the car and gives Walt his half, just throws it through the window into the car, of the earnings for Jesse's deal, driving off just before the light turns green. For a green light episode, and that's the end of the episode. Yeah, that was a pretty great way to round it off. Like, that really kind of culminates Jesse's work, what Gus wants, Sol playing a bit of a role in the mixer, but Walter being the one who's not quite, you know, on board and stuff. And this is the way to, well, you know, we hope get him back on board. It's a really, really great way to round that off. Because I'd forgotten about that whole half and half money thing. And when it was Jesse only gets half, I was like, oh, he's screwed him over. And then there was this bit later on, I was like, oh, okay, that's how that kind of makes sense. It's interesting that, I mean, it was probably done as a trick by Gus. But, because obviously clearly Jesse wasn't aware of, like, okay, even though you didn't do this deal with Walt, because he didn't involve him at all, because Gus wants you both back as partners, we won't obviously tell you that we're going to only give you half, because that's going to go to him, which hopefully pushes him back over to you. And obviously there's the car scene between Gus and Mike, which kind of pushes that forward and everything. So it's a really great way to sort of connect everything for the episode to sort of push on to the next one. So very good. What do you think?
Yeah, it is such a clever play by Gus, because it very much completely plays on Walt's ego, which he knows is a weak point for Walt, and he's figured that out.
Mm.
And I really like the fact that he does this, because yeah, Walt's options at this point are now either he gets back in, or he's got to go and go, well, you know, he either sits back and lets Jesse do it and just takes half the money, which is going to piss off Jesse, but you know, so, and also Walt isn't going to want that, because he isn't going to want Jesse cooking his product. So it's a really clever way of forcing a reaction out of Walt. And you know, because at the moment Walt's steadfastly saying, I am not getting back involved. So it's a really good way of sort of forcing him back in, because he suddenly got this bag of money. He's like, well, you know, he doesn't necessarily, Gus doesn't necessarily know exactly what Walt's going to do at this point, but he knows it's going to get a reaction out of him and push him in a different path to the one that he's on at the moment, which is him absolutely saying, no, I'm not getting involved. So yeah, I really like the fact that Gus set it up this way, and it makes it very interesting for where it goes next.
Definitely. Yeah. Very, very good end to the episode. And we'll see what happens next time. All right, let's move on to some feedback, some emails. We've got two this week. If you'd like to write into the show about any opinions or anything or whatever, or anything else, matthew@entertainmenttalk.org, Twitter, eTalkUK, and his information in your show notes. Caroline writes in again, a bit of a continued dialogue here. Says, I don't mean to keep writing in about the same thing. That's perfectly fine. You're not doing anything wrong, and it's an interesting conversation. So, but your responses are very refreshing. Do you think if BB, I'm assuming you mean Breaking Bad and not Big Brother, which is about to come back, was rebooted / remade, that Walter would be black? I guess this is a different angle on the conversation of, like, obviously we've been having this back and forth with Caroline about, you know, diversity and older shows and, you know, all that kind of thing. So a different angle on it, which is, I mean, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I'm just, this is just me in an observation sort of way, is what Disney have been doing with their live action remakes, for better and for worse, not because of the people they're picking for the roles, but because some people, yeah, it's so interesting for Disney, because they're the ones that are doing sort of the remakes. Well, not reboots, but the live-action remakes. And not a lot of people like them, but they keep making them because they keep making money.
Yeah.
So you've got that going on. See, that's where I would step in but take a step back, which is, okay, there's certain things where you look at and think, okay, if you made a remake or a reboot of such and such, like if someone said to me today, oh, Matt, Lost is going to be rebooted, I liked Lost, and I think, I'm actually surprised that sort of hasn't happened yet. There are certain shows that are sort of ripe for a reboot, and there's some that you never need to touch ever again, like Only Fools and Horses I've been kind of watching recently, and things that just work for when they were made. There's been conversations about, like, Back to the Future being remade, that doesn't need to happen. There's just certain things that, mm-hmm. even though they're older, and I'm not necessarily just talking about because you want to change a white character to a black character, I'm not talking about it from that angle. I'm just saying, because studios like money, and from what we found out, they like money a bit too much, hence the strikes and stuff.
Yeah.
Because for studios, so the angle that I'm looking at this is, for studios, they'd look at an IP, a big IP, and I think that thing made a lot of money, but we ran out of material. So let's just go back and reboot the whole thing. So something like the Harry Potter TV show. Yes. Okay, there might be some things in there that you can do. It's largely unnecessary, at least from what we've heard. There's no need to do that. The problem you're going to come across with something like that is, okay, they're a little bit, they're not as old as like things like Fools and Horses, obviously, but the issue there is people really love those casts, that cast and those roles. Not just Daniel was Harry, but like all of them. And there's some people, of course, in that cast that have unfortunately passed away. You're going to have to recast those people because you can't bring Daniel Radcliffe back to play a young, like it's not going to work.
Wizard,
so again, it's the same problem with something like Friends. You can't bring Jennifer Aniston back in, what's she, in her 50s? And I don't mean that in a bad way, but those characters are like late 20 somethings. There's just certain things that you just don't need to touch. Certain things that are a bit older, a bit out, not politically, but a bit outdated because they just look old or something. You can maybe remake those and make those better. Breaking Bad falls into that exact category of okay, there's two different conversations there. One is, would you need to remake, reboot Breaking Bad? No, because it's still absolutely excellent and it's not even that old. But as a hypothetical, no, you would not need to reboot Breaking Bad. And I would say it sits in that same wheelhouse as a Fools and Horses or a Bat. Like, you couldn't have somebody else come and play Del Boy because he's just cemented that, like, nobody else could do that role. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to. And it's the same with, like, Michael J. Fox, bless him for obviously what he's going through at the moment. Because what you're probably going to do is make a product that's so much worse.
Yeah.
And if we go over to Breaking Bad, regardless of the skin color of the person that you would cast as Walter, if it was a white man or let's say a black man or whoever, obviously there's different things there. Bryan Cranston cemented himself perfectly in that role. Same thing with pretty much all of this cast. I mean, even if you do look at, you know, one of the people of color in the show, Giancarlo as Gus, I wouldn't want somebody else playing Gus. And then you've got the other issue of, okay, actors that have obviously got Mark Margolis, who's just passed away. Would you want somebody else playing Hector? So there's just some things that just, regardless of the color of the person that plays the role, which is a little bit of a different discussion, sometimes you just don't need to do that. Now, I get it a little bit on the Disney side, because it's kind of, these things were animated, now we're going to change the formula and make them live action and see how they flow. There's a different thing there, because yeah, literally visually how that works. And it's like, okay, how would these characters look in live action situations? Obviously you've got things like The Lion King, which, okay, that obviously wasn't live action anyway, it was animated, even though it's on the list for the highest grossing animated film, which it highest grossing live action remake or something like that. It's in a list that it shouldn't really be in. So anyway, that's my long-winded answer to that. What do you kind of think of, Breaking Bad in that situation?
Going back to her original question is, would you make Walt Black in a remake? I've said before, I think the problem with making Walt a black character is that adds an extra layer of potentially quite negative complexity to that character.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the idea of sort of this upstanding, you know, white suburban chemistry teacher with, you know, deciding to turn to meth, you know, drug dealing as a way of, you know, making money because of his health insurance act is one thing. I do think there might be, had you done that with a black character, that might come across as more problematic. I don't know, but I suspect there would be a few more sort of raised eyebrows of. Like, you know, oh, you've got this upstanding black teacher and the first thing he does when he needs money is turn to drugs. You know, that comes across as a little bit more problematic, I think.
Yeah.
I
suppose what I meant was, like, okay, would you let's use the word remake. They get a bit mixed, those two words, remake and reboot. Depends on what you think is actually what. Okay, the question of, let's just use the word reboot. Would you reboot it and make him black? How about we rewind a little bit and just don't reboot the show at all?
I'm entirely with you on that. I think there are some, you know, I think you wouldn't remake, I think you can't remake this. I don't think you can remake The Sopranos. You know, that there are certain shows. I don't think you could necessarily remake The Wire in the same way. You know, there are certain shows that are of their time and are so well done that I don't think I think there will be uproar if you tried to remake them. Harry Potter is a slightly different beast, and because with the TV series, yes, they're not really necessary, but there was a lot that was left out of the books, and you can do more with a TV series version of it than you can squash into movies. But on the flip side of that, people do love those people in those roles. I mean,
It's a different reason to get to the same problem, but you come across the same problem, which is the people in the roles. So I get how that's a little bit different. So.
But I have more of a, I have less of an issue with them doing something with something like Harry Potter when there is an original source material, that you're working from, and it's a different adaptation of it. I mean, it's like, you know, there are what, a million different adaptations of Jane Eyre novels or whatever else. You know, I mean, it's that people will, when there is a book that you can adapt, people will make various adaptations of it. You know, we've had a couple of versions of things like Dune, for example, you know, the more recent one and the original, and people loved the original. So I think when there is a novel that you can adapt, you know, people are going to do adaptations. I think when you're just remaking a TV show, sometimes that's, you know, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, but it's not. I think there are certain shows that it's very, very difficult to remake. You can do, I think you can do it with procedurals and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, the remake of Hawaii Five-0 did really, really well, and you know, they've just rebooted Quantum Leap, and I think they've been fairly successful with how they've done that. And you know, you've with Quantum Leap, it's a continuation and a reboot at the same time, and they've changed the ethnicity of a lot of the characters, but the way that they've done that is it's slightly different in that you are not you know, changing the race of previous characters. I mean, that there may be something that you could do within the Breaking Bad universe, which isn't a reboot, but is another sort of show that he's dealing with, I don't know, somebody trying to take Walt's formula, and you know, then there might be a show in
Because that
that where
doesn't
you could have
ruin, that doesn't step on the toes of the, like when you do Better Call Saul, it doesn't step on the toes of the story. In fact, adds a whole bunch to the character and obviously introduces Kim, who's a phenomenal character. So,
You know, it's like we said with the Quantum Leap reboot, what they managed to do with that was make it a reboot and a continuation series. So the original series existed as was, and then this has them going back and restarting the program with a different and, as it happens, more diverse cast. And I think if you were going to do something in the Breaking Bad universe, I think you can't remake that. But I think you there is potential that, you know, in 10 years' time, if you wanted to do something within that world, you could create another show which does have a more diverse cast, but it is a complete, you know, it is a continuation show rather than a complete, like, you know, reboot of it.
To me, when it comes to, I know this is a bit different thing, when it comes to, this is more of a remaster remake, is when you do it with video games, but that's for a different, that's because, okay, a company wants to go back to the well of, let's say, Crash Bandicoot, because the characters had a bunch of bad games for nearly 20 years, which is like the post Naughty Dog era. And you want to go back to that well, you want to kind of like bring life back to that character. So rather than just porting those old games, you get a studio to work on it and, you know, obviously update the graphics, make the controls more modern, put them playable on modern systems, and then that raises the interest for that. And then if that's successful, you can then do a Crash Bandicoot 4, hopefully 5 one day. It's the same thing with, let's say, Oddworld Soulstorm. That was a little bit different because that was kind of, because we now have, well, at the time, PS4, as opposed to PlayStation 1, we can fulfill more of our original vision, which we couldn't because obviously PlayStation 1 had its limits and stuff. That's when usually that stuff works better for the most part. And we're in an era where, I mean, some remasters and stuff of games are unnecessary, and some are a bit lazy, like what Rockstar's just announced for Red Dead. but that's usually when it works a bit better. So, to actually answer the kind of question, I would just... Okay, should it be played by a black person? It's just, okay, rewind a little bit. It doesn't need to be rebooted in the first place. So, there we go. Josh writes in and says, would you say that El Camino, BB, and BCS, Better Call Saul, is the best franchise for a TV show? It's a very complete story, especially if you take El Camino and you take Better Call Saul as well, which all three of these are on Netflix, aren't they, over here, and I would hope all three of them are on, was it AMC Plus in the US, because you'd watch it in the order they came out, wouldn't you? Breaking Bad, El Camino, then Better Call Saul.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that, I mean, we've not watched it in, you know, obviously we didn't see it in that order, but it's a bit like the Star Wars movies. Is the first time you watch the Star Wars movies, do not watch them in chronological order.
No.
You watch them in the release order, because otherwise you end up in this situation where if you're showing them to your kids, watch them in the release order, because otherwise they end up seeing Darth Vader as a sort of, you know, not as the outright villain that he is. You need to be introduced to Vader as the villain, not as, you know, a fallen hero, which is how he comes across.
Right.
If you watch them, you know, if they've seen the episodes 1, 2, and 3 first. So it gives a very different feeling to how they see Vader. So you sort of need to make sure that you watch them in the release order. And I think it's sort of probably the same with this, because there are things in Better Call Saul, if you watch them chronologically, rather than the release order, there are things that pop up in Better Call Saul that I don't think would work if you haven't seen Breaking Bad first.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting with Saul, though, because I remember making a comment, what was it, 2 podcasts ago or so, when Saul has that conversation with, say, Walter, about like relationships, and we think as to, I'm not going to get into it here, but as to what happens to him in Better Call Saul. Now, when the episode first came out of Breaking Bad that we reviewed, we did not have that information, because obviously that hadn't been written or created or anything. But it gives you, and it's good that it works that way, because it means that Better Call Saul properly lines up with the intention of what happens with Saul the character. It doesn't sort of, like, if that had felt weird, then that wouldn't have lined up properly, if you know what I mean. But, and that wasn't the intention at all. But it's interesting. So I guess if you watched Better Call Saul and then Breaking Bad, it would give you, at least to me, when we came across that particular scene, gives you a bit of a different view of Saul. But then if you just watch Breaking Bad for the first time before the others, that's not the intention anyway. You still get that kind of added, you still get that added thing with Saul once you go through Better Call Saul afterwards. I can't actually, Better Call Saul didn't actually start until Breaking Bad completely finished, did it? It didn't sort of like air in between or anything, did it?
No, don't think so. No.
Not like with, I know it's not really related in the same way, but like how you have Fear and Walking Dead rotated until they finished. It didn't do that, did it? So,
no.
The show was ordered before Breaking Bad ended, if I remember, but it didn't air until Breaking Bad actually ended, did it? So,
yeah.
The only slight difference was, I believe that El Camino, did that come out in between one of the Better Call Saul seasons?
No, that was afterwards, I think.
Was it? Huh.
Yeah, because it takes place after the end of the final season, so...
Mm. Which wouldn't affect Saul at all or anything, but... Anyway.
Yeah.
But no, in terms of like a complete... Because that's...
Oh, yeah, no, it was in between... Yeah, no, I think you're right. It may have been between...
Because I remember we reviewed El Camino, but I don't remember us starting our Better Call Saul coverage at that point, because we did a season 3 review, then did 4 and 5. How many did it finish with? 6? Yeah, we did those last 3 weekly and all that. So.
Yeah.
But no, it works really, really well as a franchise. Is it the best TV franchise? I mean, you've got things like, obviously, the Star Trek, which had lots and lots of shows. Those don't connect in the same way, though, do they?
Well, they do. I mean, certainly, I think if you go in, I mean, there are the big TV franchises are probably Star Trek, to some extent Star Wars as well at this point. You could argue there's Marvel, DC, like the Arrowverse franchise, Walking Dead, Stargate, Doctor Who possibly. As well, although so much of that is reliant on the main show. I mean, yeah, in terms of quality overall, I think it is probably one of the, if not the best TV franchise. Just in terms of just completely consistent quality across Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul and El Camino, I would argue that yes, I think that is probably the best quality wise overall. Because I mean, Star Trek, which I love, but the quality has been fairly wonky. If you go from the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, there is such a variety and such a huge amount. I mean, there's like, I don't know, it's probably about like 1,500 hours or something, whatever it is these days. And not every episode of that has been great, and it's been very up and down, but there is a lot more of it. And it's the same with, I think, Star Wars. Those episodes of those TV shows have been up and down as well. So it depends what you're rating as the best. I love Star Trek. I love Stargate as well. I mean, Stargate has, again, has a lot of episodes of those shows, and they're great, and I love them as a franchise. I like a lot of the Star Wars shows. But if you're talking about consistent quality across every single episode of every single show in the franchise, I think Breaking Bad is probably at the top, just because the quality of Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul and El Camino are absolutely superb compared to everything else.
Yeah. What would you say is the worst Star Trek show? Because I haven't seen like all of them, so.
I don't know. In terms of the Star Trek ones, they all have pluses and minuses, I think, with a lot of them. I mean, I would say certainly out of the current crop, Strange New Worlds is absolutely outstanding, and I really, really love that show. Enterprise had its weak points, and I think is generally considered probably the worst out of them, but even that, towards the end of, it took a couple of seasons really to find its feet, and unfortunately it got canned just as it was really getting into its groove. I think the early season, the first season of Picard, wasn't all that good, but again, that sort of found its feet by its third season, and I think the third season was really, really good. I thought the second season was decent, but the third season was really good. I think Deep Space Nine is generally hailed as being probably creatively and narratively the best out of all of them. In terms of the older, that sort of Next Generation group of, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Enterprise, out of that group.
Cool.
Nice.
I've seen like the odd episodes of some of the old shows. I'm not actually caught up on Strange New Worlds. I sort of forgot that it came back, and then you mentioned it on Geektown. I was like, oh yeah, it came back. Sometimes you just forget when shows come back because there's just so much stuff. But yeah, as a complete package, so like when you think from Breaking Bad's pilot until Better Call Saul's finale, including El Camino, it's very complete. And also, yeah, in terms of quality, it's probably the best. So I would say, yeah, in terms of franchise, I mean, I wouldn't say Walking Dead's a better TV franchise than this.
No.
Arrowverse had its really, really, really high points. It really did. I'm still like grateful for what it gave us, but fell off towards the end, certainly. But
Dive head first off a cliff, I think, is closer to the truth, but yes.
But again, there was a point with the Arrowverse where it's like, this is better than what the DCEU's given us. But and what one of the reasons for that, it was actually a bit more connected than the which is amazing. It's amazing when you think about what the CW has done with that, because there's a TV network station which apparently wasn't making money from it the whole time, and you also had a number of restrictions, like you couldn't use certain characters and all this kind of stuff. So it still managed to do pretty well with what it had. So all right, that's what we got for the episode this week. We're back next week with episode 5. We're getting through it. We're getting through the almost at a halfway point coming up. So we'll see what continues to happen. In the meantime, you can find everything else that we do on entertainmenttalk.org, TV, games, films, main night podcasts, a few things you can look forward to, a Gran Turismo review at some point for the film, not for one of the games, that's coming out very soon. United Cast on Monday, we play against Wolves. We'll see how we get on. See if we've bought anybody else by that point or sold anybody else by that point, because it could be anything happening at any time. Gaming Talk next week, Breaking Bad next week, and maybe some other stuff. Who knows what might happen? So, entertainmenttalk.org, podcast platforms, entertainment talk for TV, games, films, and main night podcasts. If you want to support us in different ways, there's a few different options for you. Listening to more episodes is always really helpful. Word of mouth, and of course, social media. Let other people know about what we're doing and where they can find said content. Patreon, $5, $10 level tiers, ad-free podcast review options. Look at that as well if you'd like to. TV and film news, if you'd like to know when stuff is coming back, what's going on with the writers and actors strike or all the strikes and whatever, renewals, cancellations, pickups, air dates, film news, all kinds of stuff. David runs geektown.co.uk and Geektown Radio on Tuesdays. David, that is your thing. What's going on over there?
Well, news going up on the website and air dates going up at the moment. We are covering bits and pieces on the strike, particularly on the podcast. We're sort of doing updates each week on what's going on with the strike and if there's any movement on things. Podcast this week, Geek Town Radio, is episode 391. We cover things like the Barbie movie, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Heartstopper, Lincoln Lawyer. We talk quite a lot of movies actually on the podcast this week, because Gray, our movie reviewer, has actually been back on the show and actually reviewed some movies, which he hasn't done for a while. So we talked a lot about films this week. So we also cover a bit about the strike, the new Dick Turpin series coming to Apple TV, lots of other stuff as well on there. So that's Geek Town Radio 391, which you can get at geektown.co.uk and various podcast platforms as well.
Cool, nice. Bex, who's very busy and stuff at the moment, doing her thing. Trista, BYTES, usually on Twitch and other platforms. She's doing lots of cool stuff right now. So wherever she is, just go and support what she's doing. Me on Twitch at eTalk UK and YouTube Entertainment Talk Plays. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.